Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think that's a very good attitude.
It's Mike Shope.
You don't think? You don't think? I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to.
It's the Bulldog.
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
Well, I'm not crazy. I'm just thirsty.
Why don't you go to hell?
No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box?
I'm no juice box boy, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you
are.
It's
Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I'm so sorry. I've just come across this video. Welcome back. I'm Bulldog. Mic's off. Yeah. Have you seen? I just came across this, and it's about an hour old, at least from this Twitter account that I'm seeing this. There's footage of Jerry Jones landing in his helicopter on the field in the middle of Cowboys practice.
That feels right.
That is 100%. It might be the most on-brand branding moment of all time. It might be the on-brand thing you've ever seen from anyone ever, anywhere. We'll bring Chris Trapasso from CBS Sports. I'm sorry to just clobber you over the head with this nonsense, Chris, as we're just getting started. Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports. You imagine being, take your pick, Mike McCarthy, a player on the team, you know, who some minimum salary veteran, whatever, and like, you're getting ready to play a game, you know, on Sunday or Monday. I don't even know when the hell they play this week. Are they Thursday night this week? No, they're not. Anyway, doesn't matter. And the owner lands ahead. It's like out of Playmakers, Chris. Like, it's so idiotic. I can't even hardly stand it.
Yeah, the first thing that actually popped into my head was the Bills angle. Like, imagine Sal posting one of those videos of like, oh, here's Taron Johnson warming up with his brace on his forearm. And, oh, wait, Terry Pegula has actually landed a helicopter and practice is going to be delayed by about 15 minutes. Like, it's just insane. But you're right. It is completely on brand for Jerry Jones. It's kind of hilarious.
It is. But, man, I just working there has got to really be something. Anyway, how you doing, man? How was the summer? How was early fall treating you?
Things have been really good. I got to golf a fair amount over the summer, had a lot of nice trips with my family. But then I think like you guys, like everyone else listening, by the time like post Labor Day, I was ready back and it's been awesome. I'm doing a lot more general NFL analysis for CBS now, but I'm just actually looking at this very way too early big board that I'm putting together for next year's draft. So it's football all the time now, and with Bill season here, and now we're really getting into the thick of the college football season. It's been a lot of fun.
How many rounds of golf? I don't know. Do you keep track? Like, because I had a handicap because I was in a league last year, so I've still been in the habit of throwing my scores in. And if I play tomorrow morning, which I'm thinking I'm going to do, I think that'll be round number 58 on the year.
Whoa, that's a big number. That's good for you, man. I would say I probably maybe half of that, maybe 20 to 30 times over the summer. But with two young kids, I felt
right. Oh yeah,
being able to get out that much.
Yeah, right. My kids are 22 and 20. I joke around. In fact, I played on Tuesday morning, and the starter, I walked up like, "Hey, Bulldog, what's going on? How are you?" I'm like, "I'm just easing into semi-retirement here. I play golf on weekday mornings, which you know my hours. This show allows for that, so I'm very lucky in that respect." All right. Anyway. How do you feel like the experiment? I've been calling it the first great experiment of Josh Allen's career, which is this remade receiving core, a different offense philosophically with Joe Brady at the helm. What are the early returns in your opinion? How's it going?
I would say not great, even in the three wins, and I think that's why it's always important that. Certainly when you're looking at playoff positioning and if you're going to be win your division or be the one seed, the two seed, a win is all that matters, wins and losses. But I think it's important always to take other more layered or more detailed things away from a win or even a loss that those first three games, and with talking to my dad, with my uncle going into that Ravens game, not that I expected the Bills to get blown out by 25, but I said – you know, we hadn't seen the Bills receiver core really get tested. Like, maybe a little bit in the comeback from, what, 17-7 against the Cardinals in week one, that Coleman made a few plays, Matt Collins catches the touchdown. But there really wasn't much else. Khalil Shakir's made plays. But it really wasn't until the Bills got down in that Ravens game where it kind of felt like, oh, yeah, like they could really use someone to make a huge play. Now, Keon Coleman did down the sideline twice after the big drop. But I think in terms of the experiment, I think it's probably what a lot of us expected and maybe even what the Bills expected, that there would be some growing pains to figure out, like, is there going to be a pecking order? Is it really just going to be everybody eats every week? And what happens when we do face upper tier secondary or schematic team like the Ravens that can really lock down?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, I think I even mentioned in the run-up to the Ravens game how, you know, Jacksonville, we heard about, you know, 63% man coverage or whatever coming into the Monday night game against the Jaguars. They're like, oh boy, the Bills should be able to feast on that. Allen traditionally has always feasted on teams that want to do that, and they did to such an extent that Jacksonville ended up getting out of it. I wondered if a team with more talent there, and the Jaguars were banged up to begin with and still tried to play that way, which might have been insane, but nonetheless, that's a whole nother conversation. And so Baltimore was able to do a decent job on that. I wonder, though, like, I'm, you know, of course, Devontae Adams is all the rage. We know he wants to be traded. We know the Raiders are looking to facilitate a trade. I still am, I want to see more here. I'm not ready to jump at, oh, I got to junk this plan, I got to do something else yet. How do you feel about that?
That's exactly how I feel, too. Like, I can say, you know, the experiment hasn't gone amazingly through four games while still maintaining it's only been four games. And the Bills are 3-1. They're still scoring as much points as any team in the league, or probably have one of the highest points per game averages in football. And I think this regime, Brandon Bean, his front office, Sean McDermott, even Josh Allen, there's so many new pieces, but those core elements are still in the same positions that they've been in for now 5 or 6 or 7 years now, that they're not panicking after one game. Now, it was a little jarring to the system because it was the first blowout loss in 3 years, which is an accomplishment in and of its own right. But I don't think anyone's really struggling to find answers at this point or really panicked, which kind of leads me to think that that's probably how I should be operating too. So yes, I would like to see more from the offense, maybe, you know, some players being utilized a little bit differently, maybe Curtis Samuel not being used just like Isaiah McKenzie. Let him run some normal routes on the perimeter or from the slot. He's not just a gadget wide receiver, things like that. And maybe that's what Joe Brady is trying to work through, that, okay, we hit our first road bump. We know there's going to be adversity throughout the season, like there is for every team. So I don't think anyone is really panicking at one Bills drive, and that's kind of where I am at, too. I agree with you that they should wait a few more games, see how things go, and maybe in a couple weeks we're like, hey, that was just a bad night in Baltimore against a good team in prime time that started off badly. Or maybe they have to be more aggressive and trade for a wide receiver. But I agree, it's too early to make a definitive choice right now.
Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports, our guest here on the West Her Hotline on WGR. I'll tell you what could, I don't even mean a panic, but the idea, and maybe this sounds crazy, the idea of going into a game without Khalil Shakir right now sounds a little treacherous to me. Like, he didn't practice today. He's got an ankle injury. I feel like I expected him to become kind of the new Cole Beasley here for Allen. We know Allen loved to feed that spot when he had a guy he could really trust there, and I felt like Shakir could kind of ease into that if he got a lot of slot snaps, which he's been getting, but now the injury could really, really slow that down.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's been the Bills' most consistent offensive receiver. I mean, if you don't want to count James Cook and the ground game, he's been the most reliable player on offense outside of Josh Allen with 18 catches, 230 yards, 2 touchdowns, makes the big play on the scramble drill for that huge gain that led to the Bills' only touchdown on Sunday Night Football. So, yeah, I mean, to think going into a game without Khalil Shakir is scary, I think, is totally spot on. I wonder, though, that along with the everybody eats mentality, if the Bills, and I think they did a good job of this last year when Joe Brady was just kind of learning the ropes of calling this offense in Buffalo with this personnel, If this is a team that can really shape shift and say, all right, we don't have Khalil Shakir, we are going to go like almost exclusively 12 personnel, and we're going to throw the ball to Dawson Knox like 7 or 8 times and feature Dalton Kincaid, who was kind of like that, you know, penciled in breakout star for a lot of people from a fantasy angle or just in real football, and maybe totally change what they want to do. Maybe take some more deep shots to MVS off play action, things like that. Maybe even Mac Hollins, because that's really when he's been good in the NFL. He's that long striding speed down the field. I agree that no Shakir is certainly not good for this offense, but it will be the first time that we can see, all right, how does Joe Brady and Josh Allen collectively adjust, and can this team not just have one identity based on all the personnel being healthy that they're just going to roll out with every single week?
You mentioned already here a few minutes ago Samuel and his usage and the curiosity that is. Like, and you, to me, you said it exactly the way it certainly lands on me, a way that I view it. Like, he's being used like Isaiah McKenzie, and like that begs the question of like why you targeted him in free agency in the first place. I mean, you know, McKenzie was, you know, a useful player, but was a part-time bit player. And right now Samuel kind of feels like that in this offense.
Yeah, and that's been really strange to me. And I've seen on Twitter some people said, hey, you know, maybe he's still not fully recovered from the turf toe, but he's playing a fair amount. They're giving him the ball like as a running back. So I think that if he was barely on the field, then there would be, hey, maybe he's like 60%, 70% from this turf toe. It is very strange for this team that has gone completely, you know, bargain bin in terms of the finances at the receiver spot, that the guy that they are paying $8 million per year, which is still chump change by today's standards at the wide receiver spot, but for him to make that much more than everyone else, and they're giving him, you know, a jet sweep or a handoff or, you know, letting him catch the snap on that trick play, it's kind of strange. And I can't say that I remember and have watched every single snap from that 2020 season in Carolina when he was with Joe Brady. But for as much as Samuel always brought that little luxury of, hey, you can hand him a jet sweep, you can maybe let him catch a wildcat snap, I remember him being on the outside, catching balls down the field and being utilized in the slot, maybe in the screen game a little bit, because he is pretty twitchy and he's fast. But I just want to see him utilized as kind of a normal slot receiver who actually, even though he's a little smaller, has shown the ability to win on the outside as well.
Yeah, man, that's 100%. Like, if he's supposed to be a guy that can do so many different things, you should use him that way. So, yeah, you know, we'll see. Maybe that's all coming at some point here. I don't know. I did like hearing you talk about MVS and Hollins down the field, because I didn't sit with the entirety of this Houston-Jacksonville game on Sunday, Chris, but what I saw of it, I saw enough Jacksonville receivers open downfield and Trevor Lawrence just unable to hit them. And I thought, like, okay, maybe you can do some business there.
Yeah, I would say, like, the scouting report for this Texans team is as advertised. You got Stroud, you got the three receivers, they trade for Danelle Hunter, or they signed Danelle Hunter. They have Will Anderson, who was great on the edge. Hasn't been quite as good this year in terms of just generating pass rush one-on-one. But still, two formidable edge rushers. The weakness of this team, though, is its secondary. Jimmy Ward is a safety that's been around. He was with D'Amico Ryans in San Francisco, was in his heyday, very good at turning the ball over. There's Derek Stingley at corner. The other corner spot, the other safety spot, the linebackers, the nickel corner, a lot of young players and a lot of relatively unproven players. And I probably got the same amount of exposure to that week 4 game, Texans Jaguars, as you did. I mean, I watched it on Red Zone. I felt the same way. I was like, this is a team that not only got blown out by the Bills, but the Jaguars didn't have a bunch of receivers running wide open in that game, maybe outside of that overthrow in which DeMar Hamlin intercepted. But besides that, I felt like the Bills clamped down on the receivers. In Houston, yes, whether it was Christian Kirk or Gabe Davis, Brian Thomas did have a lot of instances where they were open. So I think if there's one area that the Bills are probably like, hey, this is one part of this team that we can probably exploit, even if we are down Khalil Shakir or the offense isn't quite fully gelled yet, it's the secondary outside of, you know, that number one corner in Derek Stingley.
Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports on the Wester Hotline with us. Yeah, I've said a few times this week already, Chris, Houston to me looked like they were begging to get beat in that game.
Yeah, they were.
And Jacksonville just could not do it. It reminded me of like frustrating Bills games from the drought where they'd be playing a supposed good team and it was just begging for it and they just couldn't do it. That's what that looked like to me between Houston and Jacksonville. Coleman here, for what it's worth, I feel like it's going okay so far. Like, I don't think it's going poorly. You'd like it certainly to be better. But, you know, we've seen the back shoulders. There's three of them now, right? The one in the Arizona game and then the two last week. I thought he really caught a break that the Baltimore game wasn't closer because that drop would have been focused on a lot more at the end of the first half if it had. But what's the overall on Coleman so far for you?
I think it's been good. And again, this is coming from someone that was not crazy high on him. I thought he was picked too early. I would have picked him later. But what I think what kind of got lost and Coleman got to the Bills and there was a lot of hype for him because he was the first pick in the second round and all the hoopla with the Bills trading back and Xavier Worthy and all that was that the label of, oh, this guy was just a dominant player in those contested catch situations at Florida State. And I feel like I was on this show with you guys leading up to the draft, and we mentioned Keon Coleman, that his contested catch win rate last season at Florida State was only 33.3%. He caught 10 of 30 opportunities, which is not very good. You like to see that actually closer to that 50% or even 60% like he was at Michigan State in 2022 when he was at 62.5%. So the fact that you're right, there's been the drop, but then his two other or his three other chances he's made a play on the football is a very encouraging sign going forward for someone who just turned 21 in May, and they're starting to incorporate him more in the offense. So for someone, you could look at Mac Hollins on the outside and say, all right, we know who he is. He's in his 30s. Special teams guy, had one season where he was really thrust into a larger role that he made plays, but there's not a lot of upside there with him. I think we're starting to see that because of the athleticism and maybe going back to that 2022 season at Michigan State, Keon Coleman definitely represents a lot of upside, and he could be that X factor that teams aren't necessarily game planning for, but can be that player that establishes a nice rapport with Josh Allen down the field, like Gabe Davis had, and like Khalil Shakir has gotten over the last 2 years.
On defense, really, injuries so far have been the big story. That even extends back into the summer with Milano being lost long-term, hopeful that he can be back at some point, probably not till the winter here. And then, of course, Bernard going down when he did, and they're making do with, you know, Jamarcus Ingram and Cam Lewis and Damar Hamlin. Now Rapp is out too. But maybe that's starting to turn a little. Looks like Bernard is trending in the right direction. I'm not sure. I'm not super encouraged with how it sounds around Johnson at this point, but at least getting Bernard back would be big because, boy, man, between Dorian Williams being still pretty raw and Baylen Specter, man, that was tough, and I would think that would continue to be guys that would get targeted by teams seeing what Baltimore did to them. Even if they're not equipped to punish the Bills physically the way Baltimore can, I would think just misdirection and getting them to overreact would be exactly what I want to do to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And to go a step further, for if by chance, you know, teams are watching that Ravens film, and to your point, not a lot of teams can really drop the hammer like the Ravens can on the ground. But if teams are like, hey, we can maybe throw out jumbo packages and really get physical with the Bills' lighter boxes that they play so much nickel and can be successful running the football, control the clock, keep Josh Allen off the field. What I think would be huge for Terrell Bernard coming back, besides the obvious that he was just the starter last year, had a breakout season, knows the offense really well, is that I think if the Bills then went to three linebacker sets, it could be Dorian Williams, who I think is playing, especially against the run, very well because he's bigger. He's got that speed-to-power conversion. We saw him, you know, have a couple of those big tackles on Derrick Henry. Then your third linebacker, I think, can be Baylen Specter instead of Nicholas Morrow, who looked kind of slow in that second half. I know it wasn't a big sample size, but if you have those three linebackers when teams try to really out-physical you at the point of attack, I think that's a lot better than the alternative that we saw, you know, last season with you know, A.J. Klein and Tyler Matakevich being on the field. And this year, early on, with Nicholas Morrow having to play a little bit of an older player that doesn't have the same speed as Baylen Spector.
You can help me with this guy's name. I've never said his name before because I think I was away when the Bills picked him up. But the safety, Lewis Seen, or is it Sign?
Seen.
Seen, okay. I don't remember which Bills reporter I saw this from today, but he's been working with the linebackers. Now, he's on the practice squad. He's bigger, 6'2", but he's still under 200 pounds. Like, I don't know. You're getting a little small for linebacker there, but I wonder if they're working a plan there at all to try to get him up and running to maybe supplement what they're doing. That might be something that bears watching.
100%, and I had not seen that. That is really intriguing to me, and someone that vividly remembers scouting Lewis Seen just a few years ago, 2022 draft. At his size, 6'2", and 200 pounds, that was really where – I didn't think that he was going to transition to linebacker in the NFL, but in today's game, and certainly for the Bills defense, where the safeties are so interchangeable, they're not as free safety and strong safety as they used to be even 10 years ago – he was like a classic strong safety at Georgia. He did make some plays in coverage, but that's really interesting where there, I think around the league, there are probably some outside linebackers between 205 and 215 that just are really fast outside. They're going to get flexed out into the slot. They're going to cover tight ends. And that is more interesting to me than anything else with Seen's potential upside on this Bills practice squad, because even though he didn't play very much with the Minnesota Vikings in the preseason, he kind of got exposed a little bit in just that traditional coverage role. So if the Bills, a team that is, you know, like you're saying, have been ravaged by injuries at the linebacker spot now for going on two seasons dating back to last year, Seen does have, you know, as a former first-round pick of just 2 years ago, a lot of upside, I think, probably at that linebacker position, being bigger with the explosion and just not asking them to do as many traditional coverage things that you would at the safety position.
Yeah, I almost wonder about him in like the role we saw Poyer in the back half of last year.
That's the type of player he was at. Yes, that's exactly like the type of player where in a pinch you're like, okay, we rather have him in coverage than AJ Klein. But like Poyer was last season, he was their third linebacker, and that really made it okay for the Bills to technically stay in nickel but still be pretty good against the run like they were last year, and really like they've been for the entire Sean McDermott era outside of a few games here and there. So that's interesting, and I 100% think it bears watching, because this was someone that had three straight years of quality play at Georgia.
Yeah.
Like I said, first round pick, the explosion is there, and you know, maybe he's the next guy that develops at the linebacker spot under Sean McDermott. You've had so many of these later round guys at Tyrell Dotson undrafted that learn the system and have, you know, the Bills have gotten pretty quality production out of them.
Real quick, I want to double back to offense, because I meant to ask you about kind of an overall on Brady so far as the coordinator. At some point in the summer, you know, I'm always thinking about the Bills and things to talk about on the show. I walked in one day and just said, what if he's really good? What if Brady's really good at this? And the season starts, and you've got some pretty good evidence of, you know, easy button throws, some really good, you know, spring and cook open in Miami, the Shakir fourth down play against Jacksonville. You've got some evidence of him scheming up really easy button throws. How do you feel like it's going so far with Brady?
I think it's gone very well. I mean, of course, recency bias, people are concerned about the offense, the receivers, but through four games, from all the motion, the Bills are in the top, I believe, 10 or 11 motion rate.
You're tracking all of that, right? Like play action and all that. Go ahead.
Yes. So every week I'm just looking at a bunch of different websites that are tracking these advanced statistics for the Bills offense. Play action is relatively down, and that's kind of always been his MO dating back to the LSU days and in Carolina. That's just not something that he's going to do at, you know, 30, 40, 50% of the time. But the motion rate has been really good. They're eighth at 66.8% of the time they're using motion. We all know at this point what that does. It can ID man and zone, give you favorable matchups, create leverage that you want. In the route concept, it's been really good. The pass rate has been relatively high. It's not, though, you know, there were some thoughts that this is going to become the Rex Ryan Bills. They're going to run the ball 40 times. He hasn't done that. And to your point, Bulldog, I think I have seen more easy button throws, schemed open receivers underneath and at the intermediate level, maybe not yet down the field. There was the one MBS throw that Josh Allen missed against the Cardinals, but besides that, we haven't really seen that yet. And I have to say this when I'm on this show, I have to mention yards after the catch.
Yes.
The Bills are currently sixth in the NFL in yards after the catch per reception at 6.4 yards. And you could say, hey, that's probably just Khalil Shakir, you know, isolating him, what he does individually. To me, you want to have those players, of course, but it's mostly about the scheme. And Andy Reid is amazing at that. Kyle Shanahan, I always mention them when I come on. The Bills a few years ago were at like three or 3.5 yards after the catch per reception. So to be above six, even though it's only four games in, is certainly a very encouraging sign that Joe Brady is truly getting Josh Allen's weapons out in space.
Yeah, I think, and they dipped to six off this Baltimore game because I saw, I think I mentioned you and this stat from after week three, they were second, I think.
Yes,
so
they were. After week three, they were at 7.2 yards, second in the NFL. So they have certainly done a good job, and Joe Brady's been great scheming those guys open. You watch around the NFL, that's been key to a lot of the best offenses in football.
What should we be looking for from you? Like, where can people listening and enjoying you talking to me here, despite my ineptitude, find your work, Chris?
Just everything at cbssports.com. Like what I always say, just Google CBS Sports, Chris Trapasso. My writer archive will pop up first. Anything you want to read, 90% or 80 to 90% will be regular NFL analysis. 10 to 20% NFL draft, and what is kind of fun, this week I'm going to be doing two post-game shows on the Bills social media account, and then I think it's called Bills Tonight, a show that runs throughout the week on MSG with Maddie Glab, just real-time, like right after the game ends, reaction to the Bills-Texans game on Sunday.
Good deal. All right, folks, check it out. Chris, thank you, as always. Love to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll hit you up, you know, in a few weeks or a month or two.
Sure. All right, thanks, Bulldog.
That is Chris Trapasso, CBS Sports. Excellent work. Regular guest with us in the springtime when we get the run-up to draft time, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to continue that as well as these in-season visits with Chris. All right, time for a break, which means an opportunity for me to remind you, you can call us. We can reload this conversation. We covered a lot of ground with Chris. You want to react to anything that we had to say, or specifically he had to say about the Bills, Brady, the offense, the receiver group, all of it up for grabs. Do you want to trade for Davante Adams? That's an easy button throw for you. 803-0550 is the number. Mike Shope is out sick today along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
You know, he's getting treatment, won't practice today, so anytime someone doesn't practice, you are concerned. Came up in the game naturally, and so we had to manage things a little bit there. But I'm proud of what he was able to do in the game and push through it like he did.
That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about the team's injury outlook. Specifically, that's on Deion Dawkins, who did not practice today. He's going to be maybe a little bit on edge, waiting to see what the rest of the week brings with him. Speaking of injury reports, the Houston Texans, a little bit of confusion today, because I thought earlier, and we talked to, what was our guy's name? Will Kunkel. Thank you, Zach. Will Kunkel from Houston back in the 4 o'clock hour and said Mixon hadn't practiced. And I'd thought maybe yesterday that the outlook was that he was expected to practice, but their official injury report is out, Houston's. And in fact, Kunkel was right. Mixon did not practice. Neither did Laremy Tunsil. He's got an ankle injury. Mixon's also dealing with an ankle injury. It's only Wednesday, so we'll see. Another running back, Damian Pierce, who we talked about with Will, did not practice. Elsewhere, Tank Dell was back on a limited basis. The expectation is that he will be available for this week's game against the Bills, but Mixon bears watching, and I'd say Laremy Tunsil too. Jimmy Ward came up towards the end of our conversation with Chris Trapasso just now. He also was limited with a groin injury. Those are, to me, those are the key names on the Bills' opponents injury report. Mixon certainly bears watching there if he's still struggling to get back on the practice field. But again, it's only Wednesday, so just like I said with Deion Dawkins, he didn't practice today. No one is saying he's not playing, so I don't want to make assumptions about Mixon or Tunsil at this point. But both listed as not participating. 803-0550 is the number if you'd like to get on board here. We've spent a lot of time here talking about the receiver room and Davante Adams and whether or not you want to stick with everybody eats, or as Mike likes to call it, everybody snacks, or like say, hey, let's go get a Hall of Fame receiver to plop onto the roster. Been some good conversation on that. And we'll continue on the phones now. Winton is first up this segment. Thank you for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey, how you doing, Bulldog? First-time caller. I'm going to talk about the experiment here a little bit here. You look at teams like the Chiefs that kind of won without a premier number one and maybe the Golden Age Patriots. One thing they kind of had in common is they had premier coaching to kind of overshadow the lack of maybe receiver talent. Mm-hmm. They scheme guys pretty open. They make the right decisions in crunch time. I love McDermott, but I think record shows crunch time decisions have not been the best. So with that being said, I think we need to go try to get Amari Cooper or Adams if possible to try to keep as much talent around Josh as possible. And that's all.
All right, man. Thanks. Appreciate the call. Thinking about the coaching and pivoting to McDermott and his decision-making, which, you know, it's not out of bounds by any means, but I sort of expected to hear something about Brady and whether you think, like, the scheming, because schematically, the advantage the Chiefs appear to have with a guy like Andy Reid there and that they can get by, of course, they have had Travis Kelce, too, which, you know, helps mitigate not having a true number one receiver since they traded Tyreek Hill a couple of years ago. What you're looking for is a guy who's calling the plays and designing your offense week to week, specific to that week's opponent, that can find an edge, find an advantage, and exploit something. Make them uncomfortable, make them make choices, and push them that way. And yeah, it's too early for me to say that the Bills definitively have that in Brady. I think, like I talked about late in the conversation with Chris Trapasso, the signs are encouraging early on here, I think. Of course, everything kind of got derailed in the Baltimore game. But I like some of the design, the easy button throws, and that's kind of why I want to keep going with the first great experiment of Josh Allen's career and not pivot to, I got to go get someone to replace Diggs. I want to see this through, at least get me a few more weeks here. I mean, it's week four. I've got Houston and New York on the road, then I'm home for Tennessee, and then I'm out to Seattle. If I come through that and I look more like I looked in the first 3 weeks than I did against Baltimore, I'm not really going to have much urgency myself. That's just me. Like, and I know January might be different, but I feel like if you're thinking about them needing to find an advantage in their coaching, I would worry a little less right now about McDermott and his fourth down decisions and be thinking about what Joe Brady can do for Allen with the personnel that's here right now. Because I think the early returns have mostly been positive, even with a big, nasty blowout loss in there. Alex is next up. Hi, Alex. Thanks for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Hey, thanks for having me on. So, taking a step aside from some of the X's and O's conversation, and I miss usually listen a lot, but I missed some of the conversation today, so I'm not sure what was said, you know, stemming from these Von Miller suspension. But in my mind, I really struggle to continue to be a fan of a player like that and cheer for them because I go to all the games when, mm-hmm. you know, these. If we think there's a legitimate investigation that was done by the NFL here and there's merit to what they're saying. You know, I understand from a legal standpoint, he's not, you know, facing more charges. But from an investigation standpoint, this is concerning. And I don't think we should support as an organization a player who, puts his hands on a pregnant woman. And there's concern there. And I don't know if there's anything to this, but in my opinion, we move on from this guy, regardless if he's a Hall of Famer. I don't want to cheer for him anymore. And if there's anything we can use as a bargaining chip to go get a primetime wide receiver like Devontae Adams, I don't know. Maybe there's nothing that numbers-wise that actually supports that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's anybody calling for moving on from this guy. I mean, he doesn't represent the values that I think the organization represents. So that's the problem.
Yeah. All right, Alex, I appreciate every word you just said, really, and I feel it. It is a tremendous dilemma for fans. I mean, I think, you know, the Bills aren't shedding any light on exactly what, you know, why this happened, but, you know, McDermott said you can assume what you want to assume. Almost has to be, unless there's something else egregious that happened between last November and, you know, now the suspension coming that we never heard about, which would also be awful. Yes, I think the suspension tells you the league looked into it and found that the claims that the pregnant partner at the time made were credible enough, even though she recanted and dropped the charges that often happens in cases of domestic violence. They found cause to suspend him. And yeah, you'd like to have a cleaner conscience cheering on the old hometown team. So, you know, I feel every bit of passion that you delivered that commentary with. The bad news is there's really nothing to be done. I mean, the $28 million in dead money, even with a reworked contract for this year. I think they can walk away in the offseason, but there's no getting it. Like, him as a trade chip, it doesn't exist. And it's not just because of whether a team would find him palatable or helpful. It's just the Bills would have to find a way to stash money, more dead money, that they simply cannot afford. So you're going to have to we're all going to have to put our heads down and hope for the best. Get through 4 weeks, hope he comes back and makes some plays for you, and if your cheering is muted, maybe you'll have a lot of company in that. And again, I think that's a completely respectable place to be standing on it and be feeling about it, but I really don't think there's anything to be done here. You're just stuck. It happens. It's business, and it can be really ugly, and this is an example of it. Appreciate the call, and you know raising the subject. 803-0550 is the number. Take a timeout here. Sal Capaccio coming at the top of the hour. Mike Chope is off today along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR. I got to say, like, as the baseball season unfolds through the spring and into the summer and now into the fall, I don't always exactly have my hands around or my mind around how the playoff format works. Yeah, how many wild cards? What are we? Single games? Best of three? What are we doing? It's best of three, wild card. I'm loving these first 2 days of the baseball playoffs so far. You know, there's a little bit of the baseball on in the afternoon vibe, which always works for me. I know for people who have jobs where they don't get to talk about sports and watch TV all day, maybe not so great. But I this is probably meaningless to 98% of you or more. I love that the games are in the same order 2 days in a row.
Oh, it's great. I have really enjoyed that part.
They did change the time. I think the Met game is a little later than I think the Met started at 5:30 yesterday, and I think they're not till 7:30 today. But you've Tigers Astros, Orioles Royals, Mets Brewers, Padres Braves, same. I that works for me. I like it. Not a big deal, but it's just a little thing that I'm enjoying. Astros got knocked out. The great vibes for the Detroit Tigers continue. They sweep Houston, win the first two of that series. So they move on, and the Royals are nursing a 1-0 lead over Baltimore. They won game one, 1-0 last night, right? Bobby Witt drove in the only run. Their second baseman, forgive me, it's not Witt, he plays short, just made definitely a run-saving play. The Orioles had two men on, and there was a ball hit sharply to the second baseman's right dove, got it, got the out at first, definitely would have been a tie game. A run would have scored, would have been first and third with one out. They got that out, men on first and second, two outs, get out of the inning, so they're still hanging on to that 1-0 lead. I'm digging it. I went home after our show yesterday, and all I watched was baseball. There was no surfing. Now, you know, might get a little more challenging next week when there's actual real regular season hockey games going on for me, but so far, so good. Like, digging it, even with the crappy uniforms and the tiny names and the sweat stains. I was watching the Brewers and the Mets last night. The Brewers brought in one of their relievers. Forgive me, I don't have a name for you. Bigger dude, like, you know, to be kind, a husky dude, right? Just as a big dude. And the Brewers have got their home whites are this sort of, I don't know, eggshell almost, kind of like it's an old school looking tint. So it's not like flat white. It's there's a little hue to it. Nice. It's a sharp idea. This big dude in that uniform, Owen and I were watching together. He's like, you can see the outlines of the pockets. Like, I feel like I'm looking at this guy's bare rear end. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah, the uniforms have never grown on me this so whole year. They've been bad.
They're going back. They're changing. There was an announcement yesterday. Maybe some of this was old news, but the All-Star game is they're going back to players wearing their home and away uniforms like for their teams. Good, because those All-Star uniforms were a disaster. And they're also getting the bigger names back, losing this sweat-stained, cheap-ass-looking material that these uniforms have been made of this year. So hopefully they're on the right track there. But, man, that poor dude on the Brewers, this is not a good look, man. You made the major leagues, and you're out there looking like a sausage stuffed into this thing. It's not. No, come on. You got to do better than that. All right. Timeout, Sal Capaccio, straight ahead. We had to wait till the end for Sal with the rundown on everything that happened out at One Bills Drive today. We'll do that for you next, right after this. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.